This podcast is brought to you compliments of Kaspersky Lab, protecting more than 300 million systems worldwide against internet threats.
All right, welcome to the ThreatPost News Wrap podcast. It's been a couple weeks since we did this. I blame Mike because he was on vacation.
My fault.
Absolutely. I haven't had a vacation. I don't even know what that is. take random Fridays off, and that's about it. So, Mike, while you were out, there wasn't like massive news stories, but this week is certainly sort of made up for that with the Syrian Electronic Army attacking. I guess they didn't actually attack the New York Times or Twitter or Huffington Post. They attacked the registrar that all those guys use, you know, along with a bunch of other companies that use it. This company called Melbourne IT,
right?
Which I have to say I had never heard of before.
Nope, they host a lot of important stuff, though.
Yeah, which is it's really interesting to me because, you know, most of the big registrars, you can rattle them off,
right,
you know, off the top of your head easily. I'd never heard of these guys, but people I was talking to about this story today and yesterday were saying, you know, they were always considered one of the two or three sort of big boy registrars that you would go to when you were a serious company and you were looking for security. Which is slightly ironic, but you know, the way that they appear to have been compromised basically was kind of the old spear phishing against one of their resellers, get some credentials, get into the registrar systems, and you know, away they went, which, you know, is a really familiar attack scenario for anybody that's been following security. It's happened to any number of big name companies in the last few years, but the fact that they got to a registrar that way is kind of scary in terms of, you know, the damage they did was, you know, I would say moderate in terms of the overall picture of what it could have been.
Right.
It seems like it could have been, you know, orders of magnitude worse, honestly.
Yeah, the potential was a lot higher and, you know, it kind of calls into question what their motives were, whether they were just looking for a splash considering what's going on politically this week between us and Syria. Just trying to call more attention to their cause. I don't know. But you talk about a classic single point of failure with Melbourne hosting all these companies. And if these guys were able to get into the registrar the way they did, you know, they could have caused a whole lot more trouble than what they actually pulled off.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you think about it. They could have. I was talking to the guy from Cloudflare yesterday, Matthew Prince, who, you know, that Cloudflare was kind of involved in helping the New York Times get things back together, like sort of coordinating with VeriSign and Google and OpenDNS and some other people to sort of get the DNS caches flushed and, you know, kind of get things back in working order.
Right.
And he said, you know, think about if the attackers had gone in and immediately changed the time to live on those DNS cache records to whatever the maximum is. He said 72 hours. I don't know what the maximum would be. This would have, you know, the effect of the attack would have gone on much, much longer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no, you'd still be seeing bad results for the New York Times now, which I guess some people are, depending where they are and, you know, who their DNS providers are and whatever. But, you know, it would have been days or weeks in terms of the impact. Or, you know, they may have been capturing email traffic as well. You have no idea.
Right. I mean, apparently the CTO at the New York Times right away sent out a warning internally. Don't send out any more sensitive emails, at least, because everything is potentially compromised.
Yep.
And, you know, you mentioned the time to live, too. That's the CN domain that was hacked, I guess, on Sunday that mm-hmm. we wrote about. There was a similar issue with that, too, that if they had messed with the time to live, that, you know, those sites would have been unreachable for a lot longer than they were. That's kind of what saved them, that the cache was still available and a lot of these sites remained reachable. I think they only got 30% of the .cn sites this week in China. And, you know, obviously that's a significant number, but that could have been a lot worse. And I think we're, you know, kind of looking at a similar situation here.
Yeah, you know, I remember some other attacks like this or, you know, on registrars or these kind of DNS level attacks in the, you know, in the last 8 or 10 years. And it's obviously something that security experts and the networking guys that play at the really high levels know has always been a potential problem.
Right.
You know, it's just the way that the internet is built. Like, you know, there are these, you know, not weak points, but there are these focal points for internet traffic and, you know, the registrars and people like VeriSign that run TLDs, that if you can find a way into those, you can really do some significant damage to not just, you know, a few companies, but large portions of the internet as a whole. And it's every time I see one of these, I'm always, you know, it always sort of strikes me like, why don't attackers do this more? Like, you know, why don't we see more of these kind of attacks? And I'm sure that they're happening all the time. They're just not successful all the time.
Oh, for sure. You know, we only hear about the tip of the iceberg when it comes to these attacks. And, you know, you're right. I mean, the potential for damage is so high that, you know, you wonder why they're not doing them more often than they are, or why they're not more successful than they are. You know, I can remember, you know, again, looking back, why is the New York Times, why are these media companies, you know, being targeted too? I think that's an interesting point to look at. You know, I remember when the whole China thing around the New York Times happened, there was speculation about, well, the Chinese are just paranoid about everything that's reported about them, and they want to get a look at, you know, who reporters and editors are talking to in terms of sources. They want to look at notes, and you know, mm-hmm. that's really some strange kind of paranoia to be, you know, worried about it at that level, that some guy, some New York Times reporter at a bureau in Beijing or Brooklyn is really, you know, got you spooked to that point that you're going to fire off 50 different pieces of malware to just try to get in and get his password. So, you know, it's really weird to think about what might motivate some of these attacks.
Yeah, I mean, that's like Richard Nixon type paranoia right there.
Totally.
I guess we don't have the market cornered on that mess.
No.
I'd be interested to see how much more of this we see, because, you know, I have no idea what their motives were, but you mentioned the U.S. or the Syrian, you know, the trouble over there right now, and obviously the Times has been reporting on it, and Huffington Post as well, and there's all kinds of talk about it on Twitter as well. So maybe that's part of the motivation, is, you know, showing these, you know, getting these people sort of shut down for a minute, show them what the potential power of this group is, or whatever. But they do seem to have they have it in for media sites, it appears.
They do. Which
doesn't separate them from anybody else in the world.
I guess it's the easiest way to get a splash. I mean, you know, you attack the New York Times, you're guaranteed to get a couple of stories out of it, as opposed to, you know, a power plant or whatever. If you don't cause any real damage there, nobody's going to notice. But, you know, if the New York Times isn't accessible, they're going to write about it. The Journal's going to write about it. We're going to write about it. So,
yeah,
it's an easy way to get some headlines.
Yeah, and it certainly worked. They got, I mean, New York Times wrote about it. Everybody wrote about
it. And the scary thing is that, you know, again, if we start firing missiles at them, is this, you know, is this just them kind of poking their toe in the water and see what they can do? And, you know, maybe they got something bigger planned just in case. I mean, again, you know, paranoid thinking or not, who knows? Anything's possible at this point.
Oh, yes, especially when, I mean, you consider that, I mean, nobody has sort of dug up who these guys are, although I saw a story yesterday sort of speculating, or a little bit stronger than speculation, that they're a group of like 19 and 20 year olds. They had some, you know, found some links online and sort of connected a bunch of dots.
Right.
But, you know, that's sort of an independent group, but you have to assume that their government also has, you know, offensive cybersecurity teams, just like we do.
Sure.
And everybody else does. I don't know how good they are, but we may find out soon.
Well, I mean, these guys have been pretty busy for months. I mean, they hit Twitter a couple of times, you know, and they're certainly out there, and they're certainly capable of breaking through whatever defenses, however strong or weak they are. Regardless, they're getting results.
Yeah, well, spearfishing is, you know,
seems to work.
Continues to work. Yeah. They're throwing a rock through a window.
Yep.
So the other thing that I thought we should cover is the story you wrote earlier this week about Facebook actually finally putting out a transparency report. And I guess they put out something sort of along these lines a few months ago, if I remember right. But this is kind of the first one they've put out, certainly since the NSA revelation started and everybody started asking the government for permission to, you know, publish more data on the number of government requests they get,
right,
and how many they fulfill and that kind of thing. And like everybody else, they've sort of gotten permission to report these things in increments of 1,000. So you know, for the first 6 months of the year, they got between 11 and 12,000 requests from the U.S. government.
Right.
They covered about 21,000 accounts. So that seems like an enormous amount of requests to me in 6 months.
It sure does. And they Facebook fulfilled almost 80% of those.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty big number compared to Google and Apple, which I think were in the 50s or 60s, if I remember correctly, in terms of percentage of requests that they fulfill. Yeah, Facebook's first it wasn't really a report a couple of months ago. It was more, I think they just released numbers because
yeah.
Apple was Apple and Google had petitioned the government to allow them to release more data, and Facebook was kind of hopping on board with that and released some numbers. But these are significantly higher. And just the number that jumps out is the 79%
right.
fulfilled.
And that's only the U.S. government.
That's only that's right. That's only in the U.S. government. They got – obviously, they reported on requests from all over the world, and they were significantly smaller numbers in terms of what they were fulfilling. Like for the U.K., it was 68. I think that was the next highest number. France and Germany were in the 30s. So they're definitely cooperating with the U.S. government more so than with foreign governments.
I wonder if that – it says something about the kind of data that the government is asking for from Facebook, as opposed to what it's asking for from these other companies. Because, you know, Google and I guess Twitter and other companies to some degree have sort of laid out in their transparency reports, like, you know, here's the kind of requests that we won't comply with, and here's the ones that we kind of have to,
right.
but. Typically, we'll push back if we think that they're not worded correctly or something along those lines. But, you know, the volume of requests from the U.S. government, I guess it just sort of shows that if you want to know something about somebody, you go and ask Facebook.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's, like you said, the nature of the data with Facebook, because obviously their whole business model is about connections with friends and so forth. And maybe it's a lot easier to connect the dots, and maybe – if you're looking for somebody in particular, you're asking for a broader scope of data than you would from another tech company, just because of the nature of Facebook's data and the connections that one profile would have to others.
Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe that's it. But it was kind of eye opening.
And just the fact that everybody puts their entire lives on Facebook these days, you know, so
that too.
You can just go and find out whatever you want about a target on Facebook. Half the time, you probably don't even need to send them a security letter. You just go look at somebody's profile for a half an hour, and you figure out what you need to know.
Right. And, I mean, this new search feature, too, this graph search thing that they introduced a couple of months ago, it makes the connections just
right.
so much more apparent and so much easier to find. It's, you know, I did a couple of stories at the time about – you know, how this was going to be a haven for social engineering and for fishers, you know, just to connect more dots and get more information on people in terms of what they like, where they work, you know, what their friends are into, where their friends work.
Yep.
It's just a lot easier to build that profile on a target or a victim.
I wonder what we're going to see in terms of the volume of requests between now and the end of the year, now that, you know, this basically goes up to so the end of June, and the Snowden leaks started like in the beginning to middle June. I think
it was like the first week of June. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, so most of this data covers the period before the leaks
right.
started. So I want to see what happens in the second half of this year. You know, whether there's a huge drop off or if it goes, you know, where the numbers go in terms of the number of requests from the U.S. government, because I wonder if they're going to get a little skittish, or if they're just going to be like, all right, screw it. Everybody knows what we're doing anyway.
Right.
Let's just dump it all, you know, ask for everything.
Yeah. It's definitely worth watching, see how cooperative these guys are. I don't anticipate seeing too much of a difference. I think that there's stuff that they have to comply with, you know, warrants and so forth that,
yeah.
You know, they're not going to get around it, and, you know, they can only hold their breath so long before they have to give up some of this data, I suppose, before they're legally compelled to do so. But it
does seem like, you know, some of these companies, especially Google and yeah, I guess Twitter to some extent, have sort of, you know, taken a position of we're going to we're going to push back on these things as much as we can, and we're going to tell everybody about it. So now they're kind of committed to that position, you know, like if all of a sudden we start seeing them complying with a lot more of these after they're, you know, everybody's put their business in the paper
right.
for the last few months, I wonder how that's going to go.
Yeah, but you know what? You read their policies on these things, and they talk so tough in them about in terms of what they're going to comply with. You know, and we won't do this, and we won't do that, and we need to see this and this and this before we'll comply. And then 8 out of 10 requests. Here you go.
Yeah, right.
So
yeah,
who knows?
And at the same time, like you said, if they show up with a valid warrant, you're going to turn over what they asked for anyway.
Turn it over. Yeah.
Yeah, that's just the way it works.
That's direct access, I guess.
That absolutely is. Yep, here's a big pile of data. Yeah. Thanks for coming. All right, cool. So I guess we'll see what happens with that and the fallout from the SEA attacks. I can't imagine this is the last we're going to hear from those guys.
I don't think so, unless they get completely outed and taken down, but how often does that happen?
Yeah, not that often, unless they start getting bold and bragging.
Yeah,
you know, which certainly does happen. But I guess we'll just wait and see.
Yep.
So, all right, I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Alrighty, thanks.
All right, man. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Compliments of Kaspersky Lab, a world leader in internet threat protection for small, medium, and large enterprises. Visit Kaspersky.com for more information about their line of premium protection solutions.